And now I'm going to turn it over to John Mulligan. Thank you.
Almost there. Thanks, Jeff. As Greg mentioned, strong financial management is part of this company's DNA and has played a key role in our success over time. At the highest level, strong financial management at Target is a combination of three things: strong operations, managing every part of the P&L to create value today and over time; disciplined investment decisions, focusing investments to ensure they meet the company's strategic objectives while using a returns-based approach to ensure they meet our financial criteria as well; and returning cash to shareholders through both dividends and share repurchase. These three elements are at the core of the long-range plan we first shared in 2011 and core to the progress we've made in the last several years. So let's start with Canada and discuss our progress at this early stage in our market launch. Our long-range plan for the Canadian segment is to generate 80 cents in EPS in 2017, driven by approximately 150 stores generating $6 billion in sales and $720 million in EBITDA on those sales, a 12% EBITDA margin rate. So what has our progress been so far? We're on track to open 124 stores this year, keeping us on pace to have approximately 150 open in 2017. And we've been pleased with the ability of our team to build this segment from scratch, as you've heard today from Greg and Tony and seen firsthand in our store tour earlier today. However, as we described in our most recent earnings call, we're running well below our initial sales estimates for our Canadian stores, which has put near-term pressure on our EPS as well. Despite this initial pressure, we continue to believe the Canadian segment will meet our long-range financial goals in 2017. I know this seems unintuitive, so I want to go into some detail to help explain our perspective. As we've said many times, when we build new stores, we're much more accurate in predicting fifth-year sales compared with the first year. This is because the market attributes we look at when opening stores, like population density, education, and income level, have a much higher correlation with fifth-year sales than in the first year. To illustrate, this visual shows the range of our experience opening stores and markets throughout our history in the U.S. The right side shows our fifth-year sales expectations, while the left side shows the range of our first-year experience relative to expectations. The range of first-year outcomes in this chart is two standard deviations wide, which, as you recall from your statistics class, denotes the most likely 95% of potential outcomes in a normal distribution. And reflecting my point about the accuracy of our estimates, the variance narrows as we move from the first to the fifth year. When we made our first-year sales estimate for the Canadian segment, we chose the midpoint of our experience in the U.S. We also had planned for the possibility of better-than-expected initial sales, which was prudent in light of the excitement we were observing in advance of our store openings. Now let's look at our updated expectation for Canada, which shows our actual sales experience so far and the slope needed to reach $6 billion in 2017 sales. You can see that while it's steeper than we initially planned, our updated expectation is well within the range of our experience in the U.S. In fact, our Canada plan now matches the pattern we saw following the launch of some of our strongest U.S. markets, including Philadelphia and Washington, D.C. Furthermore, as Tony explained earlier, we have a clear understanding of the reasons why we've seen initial softness, and we have a detailed plan to address them. In the near term, we're in a period in which dilution from Canada will be considerably higher than originally expected, driven by adjustments to inventory and variable expenses to match the pace of sales by location. Every time we open a store in the U.S., we encounter a set of dynamics: excess inventory on some items, out of stocks on other, higher levels of shortages as processes and systems are optimized. In Canada, this is happening in all of the stores simultaneously, and it's particularly visible because we report Canada as a separate segment. Inevitably, these dynamics will persist into the fourth quarter as we experience our first holiday season across Canada. As we move into the new year, we expect these dynamics to improve, and we expect meaningful improvement in Canadian segment EBITDA, both quarter over quarter and year over year, throughout 2014. As Greg mentioned, we have made a long-term investment in these stores, and we continue to expect them to be very productive assets. In the meantime, we are devoting all necessary resources and doing whatever it takes to get our inventory and operations in line. Now let's turn to our progress in the U.S., along with a discussion of capital deployment. As a reminder, when we launched the long-range plan, we expected our U.S. business to generate $7.20 of EPS in 2017 based on the following. We expected U.S. sales growth of approximately 5% annually, driven by an average annual increase in comparable sales of approximately 3%, combined with about 2 percentage points of annual growth from new square footage. We expected to maintain approximately flat EBITDA margin rates at their historically healthy levels, and we expected to gain about 50 basis points of leverage across D&A in 2017. In the former U.S. retail segment, this meant an EBITDA margin rate of about 10% and an EBIT margin rate of about 7.5% in 2017. However, now that we've sold our credit card receivables and are combining net credit profits with our U.S. retail results, these expectations translate to an EBITDA margin rate of about 10.3% and an EBIT margin rate of about 7.8% in our new U.S. segment in 2017. Finally, regarding capital deployment, our long-range plan assumed we would grow our dividend at a compound annual rate of approximately 18%, resulting in an annual dividend of $3 or more in 2017. And we expect to reduce our share count by an average of 3 to 4% annually between 2010 and 2017. So let's review our progress on these goals so far, beginning with adjusted EPS, which measures results from our U.S. operations. As you can see from this chart, adjusted EPS has remained largely on track when measured against the smooth path required to move from $3.86 in 2010 to $7.20 in 2017. In 2011 and 2012, we were slightly ahead of this path. For 2013, our full-year guidance for the U.S. segment would put us slightly behind that path. This is the result of a couple of factors. First, the impact of our credit card receivable sale, which we would expect to create about 10 cents of near-term EPS pressure. And second, our performance in the face of softer-than-expected sales. Importantly, however, despite these near-term pressures, we remain largely on track from an EPS standpoint as a result of strong operations, including a relentless focus on expense optimization, which has allowed us to maintain strong EBITDA margin rates, and disciplined capital deployment. So let's drill into each of these factors in more detail. Our record of maintaining healthy U.S. segment EBITDA margin rates underscores our focus on operational discipline and our continued confidence. Upon first examination, 2010 through 2012, U.S. segment EBITDA margin rates were considerably stronger than our long-run expectation of about 10.3%. However, these years benefited from large reserve releases in the former U.S. credit card segment, and we were not yet sharing portfolio profits with TD Bank. Considering these two factors, our underlying performance in these years was very close to our long-range goal of 10.3%. Even with the softer-than-expected sales in the first two quarters of 2013, we've maintained very healthy EBITDA margin rates, and we expect our full-year rate will be quite healthy as well. So while EBITDA margin rate performance has met our plan, the biggest shortfall has been our pace of sales. While comparable sales in 2011 and 2012 were close to our expectation of about 3% per year, we've said we expect U.S. comp growth will be closer to 1% this year. This expectation reflects incremental pressure affecting a wide range of retailers in which lower and middle income consumers are cutting spending to compensate for the payroll tax increase. Additionally, increased spending on housing-related durable goods and automobiles is crowding out other forms of spending across a wide range of household incomes. Beyond comp sales pressure, growth in new square footage has been short of our long-range plan, causing sales growth from new stores to be less than envisioned. This outcome reflects our disciplined approach to store investment, in which we evaluate every project against our strategic and financial criteria. However, with less new store investment than expected, we've been able to deploy more cash to other uses, namely returning it to shareholders. As a result, we've been able to grow our dividend slightly faster than the 18% growth envisioned in the plan. And we've retired shares at an annualized pace above 4%, faster than the 3 to 4% we built into the plan. Of course, I can't stress enough, without strong operations, capital deployment would not have been enough to keep us on track. As we look ahead, given total sales growth through the first 2.5 years of the plan, it's unlikely that we'll attain our original plan of $94 billion in U.S. sales in 2017. Specifically, given the economics of real estate opportunities for new stores, we don't anticipate a meaningful acceleration of new store growth in the U.S. over the next few years. And while we believe comparable sales can recover to the 3% range over time, we remain very cautious about the economic and consumer environment in the near term. Putting these assumptions together, we now expect total U.S. sales growth to average 3 to 4% through 2017, allowing U.S. segment sales to reach the mid-$80 billion range in that year. About half of this change is the result of slower store growth, with the remainder related to comparable sales. However, despite this tempered view of U.S. sales, we still expect to achieve the same bottom-line results as our original plan, $8 in consolidated EPS and $3 in annual dividends per share in 2017, as we maintain strong profit margins and offset slower sales through capital deployment. So let's review our updated outlook for capital deployment. In the U.S., we expect our annual capital investment for the next several years to be in the range of $2.2 to $2.4 billion, reflecting fewer new store opportunities, continued investment in existing facilities to keep them relevant, and increasing investment in technology and supply chain to drive incremental sales through our existing asset base. And following this year's market launch, we expect Canadian capital investment to moderate to around $300 million for the next few years, and then settle into a somewhat lower range, around $200 million over time. Altogether, this means that beginning next year and going forward, we expect capital investment to be more than $1 billion lower than this year. In addition, with next year's expected improvement with Canadian segment EBITDA, we expect to have additional debt capacity under our current ratings. We also expect a working capital benefit in Canada next year as we annualize the inventory build this year, which was required well before the opening of each of our 124 new Canadian stores. Putting all this together, our expectation today is that we'll have the capacity, while maintaining our strong single A debt rating, to continue to grow our annual dividend at about 20% pace and repurchase up to $4 billion of our shares annually in 2014 and beyond. Depending on our share price, this would allow us to retire shares at closer to a 5% annual pace compared with a 3 to 4% pace built into our original plan. So despite our current challenges, including a tough U.S. environment and a soft start to Canada, we continue to believe in our ability to achieve our EPS and dividend goals for 2017. We expect to accomplish this through the same approach that has driven our success over time. Strong operations. This year's U.S. segment performance demonstrates our ability to manage the business in a soft sales environment. Disciplined investment. Fully investing to keep our current assets fresh while investing in new assets and capabilities, like flexible fulfillment, to drive profitable growth. And beyond opportunities to invest in the business, returning cash through robust share repurchase and dividend growth. While we've laid out our current expectations today, we know that the rapid pace of technological change, combined with economic and competitive factors, will influence our outlook over time. What's important is that we continue to optimize our operations and investment to match the opportunities of an ever-changing environment, allowing us to achieve our financial goals. Finally, I want to pause to discuss return on invested capital, because at Target, there have been a lot of moving parts underlying the consolidated view of this metric. On this chart, you can see the after-tax ROIC performance of our U.S. credit card segment, along with an estimate of the after-tax cost of capital for the receivables assets. This data shows the impact of the financial crisis and the recession of 2008 and 2009, after which we saw a strong recovery to performance levels well in excess of the cost of capital. Of course, beginning this year with the sale of the credit card receivables, we've removed the assets from our balance sheet, and we're still earning a meaningful profit stream. As such, with essentially no assets backing the income, the ROIC from the receivables portfolio has become very high, essentially infinite. Now let's add the after-tax ROIC performance of the U.S. retail operations compared with the after-tax cost of capital for our retail assets. This data shows a robust 12.2% performance for Target in 2007, before we encountered the full force of the recession in 2008. However, I believe the more recent data on our U.S. retail performance may be surprising to many of you. It shows that we earned a higher return on our U.S. retail assets in 2012 than in 2007, even though the economy remained much weaker. I know I'm a broken record here, but we achieved the result through strong operations and disciplined investment. And this isn't a case where we were starving the business. After all, we invested more than $16 billion in our U.S. business over this period, including more than $3 billion in PFresh remodels alone. So what is our expectation for ROIC going forward? Our plan envisions continued steady progress in the U.S., as you've seen the last few years. In Canada, of course, ROIC is negative today, which is the result of investing upfront to drive future growth. Given that starting point, we expect much more rapid improvement in the Canadian segment ROIC through 2017. In total, our U.S. and Canadian segment expectations would drive our consolidated after-tax ROIC into the mid-teens in 2017. We believe this is a compelling, achievable outcome of our long-range strategic and financial goals. With that, I'll close and thank you for your attendance and attention today. Like many of you, this management team is heavily invested in this company, and we are aligned with you in your desire for superior returns over time. We believe we have the right plan and the right team to continue to deliver our goals.